Okay, so staying on new matters and moving on to Article 16, Agenda Paper 3. Colette, you're going to tee this up for us?
Yes, thank you, Sue. Good morning, committee members. Agenda Paper 3 discusses how an entity accounts for a particular shipping contract. The submitter asks whether, in assessing whether the contract contains a lease, applying IFRS 16, the customer has the right to direct to the use of the ship throughout the period of use. Paragraph 5 outlines the main facts we considered, and our analysis is set out in paragraphs 10 to 32 of the paper, and focuses on whether the customer can change the relevant decisions about how and for what purpose the ship is used throughout the period of use. Based on our analysis, we conclude in paragraphs 33 and 34 that the customer has the right to direct the use of the ship throughout the five-year period of use, and thus the contract contains a lease. First, we will ask the question one on page 12, which is whether you agree with our analysis of the application of IFRS 16, summarized in paragraphs 33 and 34. Afterwards, we will explain the focus of the tentative agenda decision and ask for your comments on that.
Okay, so comments on the analysis on the paper. And Sue.
All right, I have a few comments about this agenda paper. First of all, I agree with the staff that the customer has a decision-making right to change the order of voyage. I agree with that. However, I'm not quite sure whether that decision-making right means the customer has a control. I mean, I'm not sure whether the right is big enough to be reported in the financial statements. Now, I just thought about why the customer wants to have that right. On paragraph 25 at page 9 of the staff paper explains it well. You know, the customer wants to have it to deal with the situations in which a coal supplier is unable to deliver 100 tons of coal. What that means, I guess, is that the customer is not going to exercise that right often or every day throughout the year. The customer will exercise the right only in a very exceptional situation when the coal provider cannot supply the coal. So I think the economic impact of that right onto the economic benefits of the customer is going to be very small, not big. So I wonder why we have to report that small right onto the financial statement by adding up a big lease assets and lease liabilities. And also, if we think about the objective of this right, the objective of this right is not to maximize the economic benefits of the customer. What I see is that the customer is trying to minimize the losses or just to get the continuous supply of the coal. So I don't see, the relationships between the economic benefits and the specific right of the customers. So I think if we make this decision, and if we say this is a lease, and if we make the customer to report a big list assets and liability in the financial statements, I think that can mislead the users or the readers of the financial statements. If any user see a big list liability or assets in the financial statements, the user might think that decision right has a big impact on the economic benefits of the entity, which is not. So in that sense, I think we have to be careful with the agenda decision. Maybe we can at least say something about, we have to think about the economic benefits, I mean the effect of the rights onto the economic benefits of the customer when we decide whether the customer has the control of the asset or not.
Do you want to respond at all, Petrina, just because that's quite important to the analysis? So this is about whether or not it's predetermined or not, I think.
And potentially thinking about the effect, the right that is retained by the customer, which in this case is about is about making a decision about for each voyage where the ship starts. I think it's whether, I think if I understand you, and so you're questioning whether is that really a relevant decision-making right, and considering, you know, whether that gives the customer the ability to change how and for what purpose the asset is used. And so I suppose our analysis on that, is in sort of paragraphs, whatever, you know, 23, 24, 25, 26. And what that explains is that why we think in this case, this right does give the customer the ability to influence and affect the economic benefits that it gets from use of the ship. I mean, part of that, which I know we didn't spell out, is if you look at the fact pattern, which in the submission, which very helpfully sort of sets out where those starting locations are, X, Y, and Z, you can see from the fact that those starting locations, by the way, it must be quite a distance apart, because it's going to take quite a bit of a difference in terms of times of the length of time the shipment takes, which says that decision-making right, they retained at least when it is exercised in a sense, must have some impact. And I suppose the other thing I'd add is, I think you mentioned, Jung, so thinking about maybe how often the customer might exercise that right, etc. The analysis in IFRS 16 at least is not based about likelihood or how often it happens. It's based about the rights that the customer has. And so in this case, the customer has that right, and you're looking at whether, you know, if and when they decide to make those decisions, whether that, you know, would influence the economic benefits that it gets from use. So the assessment doesn't include any assessment about likelihood of exercise.
Bertrand?
I agree with the staff analysis and with the staff conclusion. What I liked in the paper mostly is the fact that you focus to analyze whether this was this contract specifically is long-term service contract or lease contract. So on paragraph B24B1, let's put it that way, you focus there on the operations of the lessee, and I think it's really the best way to apply such a paragraph to assess whether you control the use of the underlying asset or not, or the you control the right to use the asset. I think this analysis in the agenda paper was very helpful. Maybe we'll comment that later on. I would have liked to maybe that you enhance a bit more the agenda decision, the tentative agenda decision. I had the feeling that the staff was a bit shy in the tentative agenda decision by comparison to the analysis in the agenda paper. I would have replicated, but maybe we'll comment on that later on. I would have replicated a bit more the analysis contained in the agenda paper into the tentative agenda decision. Maybe conclude in the tentative agenda decision that you have a lease contract, which is not explicit in the agenda decision currently. But for me, I totally agree with where the staff comes to.
I also agree with the staff analysis and the staff conclusion. And I'm fine with the agenda decision, but I thought potentially it could be improved if we were a little more blunt, a little more. I think the staff kind of, well, Bertrand put it as a little shy. I think the message, right?
I must remember this. I've never been accused of that before.
Always a first. I think the message that is trying to be conveyed is that you don't get into B24B unless all of the how and for what purpose decisions are predetermined. If there's any that are not predetermined, well, then you're still in B24A. And I thought in the fourth to last paragraph, the paragraph that starts the committee observed on the fact pattern, you know, that last sentence there, I think you're trying to say that, but I think we could be a little more blunt and just say specifically, if all the If not, all of the how and for what purpose decisions are predetermined. You still analyze it under B24A.
Austin?
Yes, I also fully agree with the self-analysis and conclusion. I think it has been explained very well why this is a lease. Just two observations. One is picking up on what you just said. I think it would also be quite helpful to include some, you know, some of the wording that's in paragraph 26 in the agenda decision, which, you know, it talks about it's only when all of the relevant decisions have been decision-making rights are predetermined that you would apply 24B. So I think it would be quite helpful because that's key to the analysis to include that in the agenda decision. The other observation I would make is, you know, obviously I think there can be situations where there are decision-making rights that are not relevant. But I think the staff has done also a very good job to explain why in this case these are relevant decisions. So I think the word relevant is key here. I've had a couple of people commenting on, you know, what about trivial decision-making rights that don't affect the economic benefits. But I think that's captured by the word relevant. And so I fully agree with the analysis and the conclusion.
Okay, thank you. Goro?
I cannot fully agree with the staff's analysis. I think I have similar that the concern with Jansu, and I agree with the most of the staff's analysis in paragraph 33 to 34, but one key element, B2 of the paragraph 33, I do not think the customers like to change the order of the voyages. In many cases, would have a significant impact on the economic benefit that the customer would receive during the contract period. The total volume of coal to be transported and the total mileage of voyages throughout the contract period are predetermined. Therefore, the change in order of voyage should not have any significant impact on the predetermined variables, hence the total economic benefit. If this is the case, I do not think the right to change the order of voyages would automatically change the customer's decision on how and for what purposes the ship is used. Having said that, I do not preclude the possibility that the order of voyages may have some significant impact on the total economic benefits, probably in rare occasions. And if so, I believe we had better leave this to the preparer's judgment if the contract would contain the lease or not, in order to better depict the economic substance of the contract. I am concerned that the proposed agenda decision is too prescriptive on the very specific fact pattern. Besides my concern on the staff analysis, I am also concerned that the agenda decision may lead to a significant change in practice, which may not faithfully represent economic substance on the contract, which mislead the users. So I'm not opposing the staff's recommendation not to add this to agenda decision. However, I oppose that proposed wording of the agenda decision. I think that this kind of analysis should have a more room for the judgment. So that I think that the agenda decision may be relied in that regard. Thank you.
Bonnie?
I agree with that and what Young Sue said, that I think that what I had trouble with is the last sentence in paragraph 26 of the paper that says, if the customer retains any decision-making rights, any such decision-making rights with all others being predetermined, then the customer has the right to direct the use of the asset, which I think can be read very black and white, that if there's any right, regardless of how irrelevant or insignificant it is, then does that mean we have an asset, a lease? And I think that I think is too prescriptive, and that's where I have some issue, particularly in kind of the analysis. And is the right to determine the order of the voyages really significant in terms of the context of this? I don't think it's clear. I think it is judgmental.
Would you, sorry to pick on you, Bonnie, but I'm digesting the comments and so my brain's catching up, but would you have felt more comfortable if it was sort of confirmed more on the sort of conclusion, if you like, in the agenda decision that when it's observed that there's a right to direct how and for what purpose, and in there there's a link back to the fact that this analysis is based on an assessment that it would affect, could affect the economic benefits derived from use. So to reinforce the fact that they need to have made that judgment, so it's not just, sort of builds a little bit on Carsten's point as well, it's not any old decision-making
yes. right. I think that's rather critical.
It's emphasising toward the end more that the assessment in the fact pattern, which, by the way, is not as built out, but I know that Nicolette's going to come back to that. It is. You do need to assess whether or not there's decisions that actually would make a difference to the economic benefits. I think that's what the analysis is. And when you're in that situation, this is the analysis.
Mm-hmm. And I think
that's not coming through as strongly as you might have wanted.
No, and I think that's really important because we know some regulators look at the words of the agenda decisions and use them as authoritative, even though they're not. And I think we need to be very, very careful about what the words say in here. That it is a judgment. It is not just any old right. It has to be relevant, and it has to be impacting the economic benefits in order for there to be a lease.
We try to be careful on that, yeah. But we can look closer. We always mention relevant, and only to come back. It's only to say I understand your point, but at the end of paragraph 26 in the paper, we did say, and I know it's very subtle, any such decision-making rights, which, of course, was referring to relevant decisions, but I just wanted to clarify that. So we're agreeing with you.
I just wonder if the repetition might make people feel a bit more comfortable. Jim?
I'm a little bit worried about the fact pattern described, since I think the staff did a very good job analyzing and leading us through the analysis. But just thinking about the benefit, my concern is that which party may bear the loss if this asset is sitting idle? For example, I know there's agreement on the contract saying you're going to ship from XYZ to F. But what if location X just had a tsunami? Location Y just had an earthquake. Z is experiencing war criminal activity. So all of a sudden, this ship just has to be sitting idle. Who is bearing the loss? I think it has a lot to do with the result, because if not on the owner of the ship side, there will be a so-called service contract. Just like air ticket, which is, as the customer, I bought these many tickets for the calls to be shipped from XYZ to X. So my concern is if we have a fact pattern saying that we have this minimum pay or bottom line, regardless whether XYZ happens or not, you're going to pay the owner of the ship this amount. It's more like a lease. Otherwise, it will be a more like a service contract type of activity. So I'm looking for a kind of a additional fact pattern to guide me through the results.
Guy?
I'm probably going to echo of what a number of others have already said. I guess, first off, I agree with the approach the staff has laid out in the paper in terms of analyzing the fact pattern. But to me, I think, as others have suggested, the core of this issue is whether the ordering of the voyages decision-making is a relevant decision that affects the economic benefits. Mm-hmm. And, depending on the very precise facts there's judgment involved in determining whether those are relevant decisions and are most relevant to affecting the economic benefits. And, slight changes to the fact pattern may influence how that judgment is made at the end of the day. That being said, I can certainly see a conclusion that those are relevant decisions and they are the most relevant to the economic benefits, and there could very well be a lease there. But there is judgment inherent in that. I did also observe, though, that a lot of that was sort of taken out of the agenda decision in a way, in that the fact pattern is determinative, in that it says many but not all of the relevant decisions about how and for what purpose the ship is used are predetermined in the contract. The customer has the right to make and change the remaining relevant decisions. So we've been given as a fact that, you know, that judgment has already been made. There are relevant decisions to be made during the period of use, and that decision making rests with the customer, not the supplier. So, you know, given that, the answer then seems to be fairly obvious in terms of where we go from there. You know, I was wondering myself if there was a way to sort of bring to life a little bit more in the agenda decision, you know, the need for that judgment around assessing whether the ordering of voyages are relevant decisions and whether they're, you know, they're the ones that are most relevant to the economic benefits. But frankly, I was struggling personally to find a way to do that. It is inherent in here, in that you know there's a good discussion of B25, for example, about the need to really think hard about that. So it is there implicitly, and I have to admit I couldn't. I don't have a good recommendation on how to do more in the agenda decision to bring that to life. But to me, that is, again, the core of the issue, and I think that's what most people are observing. But, you know, the way the agenda decision was put together, I think nicely, deals with that in the way I was describing, because it's set out in the fact pattern.
Thanks, Guy. Bruce?
Thanks, Sid. Just taking a look at this, I mean, I accept what everybody's saying about judgment, and I agree with the agenda decision, the conclusions that we've got in terms of that. I mean, whereas I appreciate everybody's really focusing on this concept of judgment, to me, B25 kind of tells us to do that. And I guess the only concern I've got is I'm worried a little bit that if we continue to harp on about the judgment and we make such a big thing of the judgment, well, the way I read it is B25 is already telling me to look at the most relevant facts, and I mean, the only way I can do that is using judgment. I'm just worried if we keep putting so much emphasis on this, we're going to make this whole thing look so judgmental. They're going to say, well, is there actually any guidance?
We're not going to have any leases anymore.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm worried about. Are we kind of going to start getting to a stage where people are going to say, well, yeah, B25 is so judgmental, guys, I'm actually not going to bother reading it anymore. I'm just going to use judgment. And so, to me, the judgment that everybody's talking about is already, to me, very inherent in the wording in B25. And so I appreciate we can refer to it, but I'd just be very cautious about making so much such a big emphasis of it. And I think maybe that's where Guy was having the problem with the wording, is that I think we're just going to kind of judgment, but we've already got the guidance and the words giving us that. The second thing I was going to say is, I, as far as I know some people may comment around whether we should do it, I think this is a very topical issue right now. And I think what I like about this agenda decision is that it's very analogous to a lot of what's happening at the moment and a lot of the questions we're seeing on IFRS 16 in the application. So granted, where a lot of the clients may not, may not necessarily do shipping, the type of situation they're talking about is, any logistics, anything. This is kind of so important. I think this is a kind of agenda decision we need to get out. I personally don't think it's the most difficult decision to get to, but I think it's a great example of the application of the principles in 16, so I'd support it.
Okay. Brian?
So I agree with the analysis in the staff paper. I take the point about too much judgment, not enough judgment. Clearly somebody has to go through and distinguish the relevant decisions from other operational decision-making rights, which is what the paper does. I think my starting point for a ship is that where to sail it is a really good candidate to be a relevant decision. And I don't mean to be at all flippant. I looked at this example and I was thinking, what version of this example might not be a lease? And I think, well, maybe if X, Y, and Z were just different loading bays at the same port, and you decide on a day-by-day basis when the ship arrives which bay to dock the ship at. Seems like an operational decision. Here, the ports are a long way away from each other. The decision as to which port to go to is driven by whether or not there's going to be coal to collect there. There used to be a lot of coal mining where I grew up. It's a complicated business, and over the course of 5 years, I wouldn't want to commit in advance as to how much coal was going to be in what place at what time. So there is a role for judgment, but I do think that in this case, it is almost certainly a relevant decision. Part of what's going on here, and this comes back to the comments about should there be something blunter, is that people look, I think, at example 6A, and they think, is my fact pattern like 6A? Is example 6A, that's the one where everything's predetermined, is that a big target that I can aim at? And personally, I think it's quite a small target because it requires all of the relevant decisions to have been predetermined. I think that would be something helpful to bring out, and there is a comment to precisely that effect. I think it's in BC 121. So predetermined, the answer in 6A is a possible answer. The standard already says, or the supporting material already says in BC 121, we expect that to be the case in a small number of cases. And I wonder if that's a thought that could be evidenced and referenced back to support this idea, just to give a bit of guidance as to how often are you going to find these particular types of contracts are just service contracts.
Okay, thank you. Lisa?
Not much to add here other than I thought the paper was very well written and the analysis was excellent, and I agree with everything in the staff paper. And maybe just to the couple of points on paragraph 26 of the conclusion, if we make a little bit more of that clarification about the economic benefits, I think that would be good. But no, supportive of it. I agree.
Young Sue?
You know, I agree with Patrina that the standard doesn't say anything about how important or the material derived should be to be considered as a relevant decision. But to me, materiality is everywhere in accounting, especially if you think about the users. Materiality is very, very important. If we put something non-material in the financial statements, I mean, if the economic impact is small, but if we put it into the financial statement as a leased asset or liability because we decided it's a lease, people will be misguided by that. People say that that assets and liability means that the company has something, some right, that significantly or materially affects the economic benefits of the company. And I think that is not the case in this example. So what I'm trying to say is that, you know, maybe it's going to be too much judgmental if we say materiality should be considered in the decision. However, that is the nature of accounting, I should say. So that is my whole point. I'm not disagree that the customer in this example has some kind of control. But that control, I think, is not big enough to be presented in the financial statement.
Just thinking about some of the points about being blunter and maybe looking ahead at the drafting of the agenda decision. People around the table have done a lot of prep and thinking about this, and some have spent years working on IFRS 16 and have a lot of expertise. So it may be obvious to them, but not as obvious to others, that the fact pattern is that some but not all decisions are predetermined, and it may be quite useful to point out that when some but not all decisions are predetermined, you have to consider whether the items that are not determined are relevant decisions, because you only get into B24B if all relevant decisions are predetermined, and you know that. It's kind of a statement of the obvious, but it also kind of goes to Brian's small target point that you only get to that example if you conclude that all relevant decisions are predetermined, which is why the staff is focused on analyzing whether the customer has a right to direct how it's used, rather than looking at B24, B sub I, the right to operate. You know, it's implicit in what you have focused on to analyze. It's and so maybe just bringing that out as a statement, that the first step, and I'm not suggesting getting into the details of the fact pattern. I think just in terms of thinking about the logic, say, because some but not all are predetermined, you then, as the next step, have to determine whether the remaining decisions are relevant. And I think, to a point Young Soo made quite early on, it's maybe less about whether you expect to exercise them, but whether you have the right to exercise things that you think are relevant.
And tying in that economic benefits point. Now, Nicolette, can I hand back to you? Sorry. Bonnie wants to come.
No, I was just going to agree with what Mary said. As I was looking kind of at the agenda decision again, I think that's the relevant point to make very, very clear, is that the decision is around the non-predetermined and whether or not they're relevant, and then making that assessment. And I think that implicitly gets to the judgment point, because that's the judgment that has to be applied.
Yeah, but we can refer more directly to the requirements. Okay. Nicolette, you wanted to give us some color about the agenda decision?
So the tentative agenda decision, as you've all said, does not address the very specific fact pattern in the request, but explains more generally how an entity applies the requirements in IFRS 16 on the right to direct how and for what purpose an asset is used. This is because we think that the fundamental question, and hopefully you do too, is about how the requirements in IFRS 16 apply in situations in which some decisions about how and for what purpose the assets are used are predetermined, whilst others are not. And it would be most helpful to the stakeholders to focus on this in the tentative agenda decision. Paragraph 36 presents our analysis of whether the committee should add this matter to its standard-setting agenda. On the basis of our analysis, we recommend that the committee does not add this matter to its standard-setting agenda. Instead, we recommend that the committee publish an agenda decision that outlines how the applicable requirements in IFRS 16 apply to the contract. Appendix A outlines the proposed wording for the tentative agenda decision. So now, please, may we discuss question 2 and 3 on page 13 and ask if you agree with this recommendation and whether you have any comments on the proposed wording of the tentative agenda decision or any further comments I should ask.
So before I open it to the committee, just reflecting on the suggestion that Mary just made, which I think would be helpful to make the agenda decision more useful in terms of helping people understand how to apply 16. I wonder whether that means that it's better in the fact pattern, given that we've already tinkered quite a lot with how we've set the fact pattern out relative to the specific question that came in, to more generically say in the fact pattern that there are decisions that are left outstanding, and then in the agenda decision to talk about how, because there are decisions outstanding, not everything is, well, predetermined, but also that you need to make this assessment of whether the decisions that are outstanding are relevant decisions, and then point people to B25 and this focus on economic benefits, and then sort of build the analysis from there. Then we'd need to obviously change the way that the agenda decision lands, because it wouldn't really be opining per se on whether or not this is a lease or not. It would just be telling you what the analysis is that you need to do, which I think would make it still as useful, but it would help us bring out both this point that Mary's made, which I agree is helpful for people to understand that the first thing you sort of need to work out is whether you're in predetermined land or not. And when you're thinking about relevance, we can emphasise some of the points that others have made about the importance of looking at the economic benefits, et cetera, as set out in B25. You can still make the points about the operation and maintenance, but it's more of a agenda decision that helps people step through the questions they need to be asking themselves to reach their decisions.
But paragraph 33 in the agenda paper is a good summary of the conclusion of the analysis made for this specific submission, and I think it's useful to incorporate most of the language in paragraph 33 within the agenda decision. Actually, I'm not clear in what you're saying, Sue. Are you suggesting that we... Because I felt that the tentative agenda decision was a bit diluted in terms of where you land. It's obvious that in the submission that was submitted to us, the contract is a lease. So at a minimum, we should conclude on this submission that the contract is a lease. It's currently not said. In the paragraph before, you could add, and thus the contract contains a lease in the fact pattern describing the request as mentioned in this paragraph. And I would then effectively, I'm not sure I agree with a kind of more diluted even tentative agenda decision in this specific fact pattern. I think that effectively the job that was done by the staff in the agenda paper is very clear. You have, I agree with Bruce, you have inherent to the application of paragraph B24 in IFRS 16, judgment to express. So in certain instances, you will conclude something, that it's a long-term service. In other cases, you will conclude that it's a lease contract. But it's pretty obvious that in the submission that was provided to us, it's a lease contract. So I wouldn't... I'm not sure I'm in favor of having a rather kind of even more diluted tentative agenda decision. I think it should be really very clear that what is the submission, paragraph 5, what is the analysis we made to the submission, paragraph 33 of the agenda paper, and the conclusion is, in this instance, it's a lease. And then, effectively, we can add a focus on this predetermined, not predetermined question, which is effectively key in this circumstance. But I would have taken another total different path, that is to really be very precise in the agenda decision, so as to be rather educative in the way we effectively communicate our decision.
I think there's, in my mind, there's three different approaches we could take with this agenda decision. And I was thinking of one of the last two, but you're saying what the third one would be. So for completeness, I think let's set them out and then work up from there. So one approach would be to hinge the agenda decision more specifically on the facts that are in the front of the paper, which is closer to what paragraph 33 does, because 33 relies on talking about destinations. It pulls it much more closely to the specific fact pattern that was sent in. And that would be a more specific, and that would enable us potentially to be more black and white on the conclusion, which I think is your sort of starting position. I think the second alternative would be to do something which is closest to the way that the tentative agenda decision is drafted now, but to bring out more in the agenda decision the importance of, in the fact pattern at the front, that this decision, this determination that there are relevant decisions that are not all predetermined in the contract, to bring into that analysis a reminder that assessment is made, thinking about economic benefits and reminding people about B25 a little bit earlier in the submission. But that would be in the agenda decision, but that would be in a sense an analysis that, based on the assumption that an assessment has already been made, that you do have relevant decisions because of the economic benefits, etc., and to lead in, but it's close to this with just some tweaks. Mm-hmm. Or the third one, which was what I was sort of wondering about, would be to make the actual fact pattern more neutral, to make the fact pattern more to say that, so moving even further away from the specific question that came in, to say that there are some decisions left outstanding, and then to handhold through that, okay, because we're in this situation, you've got to ask yourself the question, are things predetermined or not? You've got to ask yourself, given the decisions that are outstanding, are these the relevant decisions based on the assessment of economic benefits, and handhold you through. In that case, I don't think we'd really be reaching a conclusion at all. It would be more reminding people this is how you have to do the analysis. So I think the first one is very tied to the 5 years you can choose between ports and trips and things like that. And the third one is the most neutral, and the one in the middle is a slight tweak just to make it more clear that this assessment of relevant decisions that's underlying the fact pattern is based on this economic assessment. I was suggesting moving towards the third one, but I think you were suggesting moving towards the first one. Do you want to say something?
No, I don't want to add
one. which I would prefer.
I'm just a little bit... My preference would be not to tie it too hard to the fact pattern, just because it's so... I'd rather make it more useful more broadly, personally, and also because I think as a committee we need to be careful with the agenda decisions to resist the temptation to answer specific questions if we think we can achieve things without answering specific questions.
Yeah, but at the same time, we are really just applying the principles contained in IFRS 16. We're not doing nothing more than that. So I have the feeling that it's something, because in very other circumstances, we used the exact same paragraph. We focused on the way we were effectively operating and we were really controlling the operations themselves within the context of this contract. And we might have concluded that it was not a lease contract, but we just did the exact same analysis as the staff did in this specific contract. And so it's not useful to just say in a specific case how you articulate the reasoning of all paragraphs contained in B24 of IFRS 16. And my fear would be that if we dilute the analysis and the conclusion, then...
We get less value. It'd be less. It's more generic if we take that approach.
Yeah, and then is it more explicit for those to which we want to communicate the answer? I'm not sure of that.
Right. See what people think. Sorry, I wasn't concentrating on the order. Bonnie.
So I think my preference is in contrast to Bertrand's, and that's, I guess, your option three, which was more generic to talk about the things that you consider. The decisions that are not predetermined and kind of handhold through that analysis and not coming to a conclusion. To me, that's, I think, more helpful. One of the concerns that I had about the agenda decision as drafted was if we're going to give more general guidance, which I think is what the staff was proposing in paragraphs 36 and 37 of the paper, then is a tentative agenda decision the right place? Is it more educative material? But I think using the proposed kind of more generic approach of how do you step through the analysis, how do you think about the decisions that are outstanding and not predetermined, what are relevant, and how do you think through that, applying the guidance, to me that's more helpful.
Jake?
Similar comments to Bonnie. I think that more generic discussion has more utility. I think that paragraph C in the setting out the facts ties your hands so tightly to this is clearly a lease that you lose that value in really thinking through what are those decisions and are they relevant decisions.
Brian?
Slightly different thought. So the fact pattern is very, very specific. So I don't think it's absolutely essential to answer that very specific fact pattern in the agenda decision, but I do think that part of the utility of this agenda decision is to get across this idea, as I was saying earlier, that 6A is a really small target to aim for. So if we were going to not answer this specific fact pattern, I would still want the agenda decision to be pretty clear that you can have a very narrowly defined right of use, which is what you have here, with very few remaining decisions, but it's still to be a lease.
So you'd like a reference, if we could, to the basis paragraph?
So I would like the overall thought to be there, and one reason I feel comfortable having that thought there is that it's already stated explicitly in BC 121. So I'm not pushing for a particular reference, but I am pushing for that idea, that tone, to be part of this if there is not an answer to the specific fact pattern.
Okay. And I would also, I don't think that's mutually exclusive between what you want and approach three. And I think maybe it would be useful again in the sort of education mode of the potential agenda decision to remind people that sometimes when there's a, some of the decisions are predetermined, it doesn't mean that you're not in a lease, it's just changing what your right of use is, and that reminder might be useful as well.
Lisa?
Yes, I actually am probably would agree more with Bertrand on this, and actually by listening to the different views around the table that were being spoken, that if we go with option three, I think that's just kind of laying out what's already in the guidance and just allows more judgment to be made on different people's views, and therefore it's going to create more inconsistency in practice than consistency. So I think making it clear that in this particular fact pattern, that this particular one, why we deemed it to be a LISC, is clear guidance in how we analyzed it, but then reiterating the point about, but you do need to, you know, this is how you need to go through and analyze it, actually would provide a bit more guidance.
Sort of combine one and three.
Right in. Yeah.
Okay, Carsten?
Yeah, I also think that would be addressing it more broadly, so it's helpful to people, to understand the principles, but also answering the question that was submitted, so making it clear either explicitly or implicitly that in this particular fact pattern it would be a lease, because there are remaining relevant decision-making rights to Bertrand's point. So I would also be in favor of combining the two, not just answering the specific question, but expanding a bit more generically by reference to, I think, paragraph 26 in particular, mm-hmm. but also making it clear what the answer is in this particular fact pattern. I think otherwise my worry is that people will say, what others mentioned earlier, there's some judgment around this, and so judgment means I can do what I want.
Yes.
Jim?
I like the alternative one, if we could, but as I mentioned earlier, I am really worried about this predetermined right and the benefits. If the world is peaceful and we could control whatever happens in the 5 years down the road, that could be the case. We could give them the clear answer as a lease. But there are so many kind of factors that we could not have control, so we don't know who will take the benefit or the loss on the consequence of this contract. I really hope there's somewhere on the submission mentioning the minimum pay or which side of the party could bear the benefit or the loss. That will give us a clear answer on this. Otherwise, it could just totally overturn the conclusion. That's my biggest concern. I just gave you three examples that no party on this contract could ever control. It's beyond any, but it has material effect on the benefit or the negative benefit on this asset. Who should be bearing the benefit or the loss? I think it should play a big part on that. Is there any term or arrangement on the contract mentioning this? If so, we could go down the path of alternative one, just tell them it's a lease or it's not even a contract, it's a future or right to use the boat. That's it. If the owner bears all the losses, if the asset is sitting idle, it's not a lease. It's just a right to use.
I'm just not sure that analysis on the disaster scenarios.
I don't know. So I think we probably could not reach the conclusion on the alternative one. So we better do the alternative three. Just give them the generic way of reading and thinking that's a more appropriate approach for now.
Carl?
Yes, thank you. I'm supportive as well of alternative three. This support is consistent with past discussions, and I think we should follow this road as much as possible. However, we are not following frequently. Therefore, even being supportive of alternative three, I'm worried about how consistent we will be amongst all the other decisions.
Thank you, Carl. Guy?
As I was said in my earlier remarks, I was initially thinking it would be good to bring to life more the judgment around the B-25 assessment, but I was struggling personally to find a good way of doing that. And I think this discussion is it reveals to me that there was a lot of thought put into the way the agenda decision has been drafted, because it strikes
always
a balance.
It may not always be evident. But
this discussion makes it pretty clear to me how evident it is, because we are giving an answer to the specific question that was submitted via the fact pattern. So we've said, hey, we think the ordering of the voyages in the fact pattern submitted is a relevant decision, because we've stated so in the fact pattern. Yet we've left it generic enough so that there is some use in the agenda decision beyond the specific fact pattern. And we do call out, as I said earlier, one of the biggest paragraphs in the agenda decision is the discussion on B25, which is about the judgment around relevant decision making. So I think, you know, on balance, hearing these different perspectives in giving a very specific answer, giving a very generic answer, and the pros and cons, I think the way the agenda decision is crafted strikes a really good balance between those two.
Are you more approach two, to use my 1, 2, 3?
Yeah.
In approach two, if we wanted to use it, we could put the bid in that starts off reminding people about you having to make the assessment of whether everything's fully predetermined or not.
Yeah.
As needed to the analysis.
Yeah, my takeaway from the conversation was that if we were to amend the tentative agenda decision we've already had, the two key things that we'd absolutely have to do coming out of the discussion are firstly to make a more blunt statement to the effect of, if not all relevant how and for what purpose decisions are predetermined, then you're in B24A. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is about the importance of thinking about relevance, and it is possible that you can have decisions that are not relevant. So those two things would go in.
Bob.
So as I think about the alternatives that you laid out, I go back to what is the objective of an agenda decision? What's going to be most useful to people? Is it going to be to answer the specific fact pattern that was in the submission? Or it's going to be to describe more generally the principles to be applied. I think it's the latter. I think that's what's most useful. I think I fall more into the camp too, because I think the adding some of the facts in the submission helps bring that to color. Mm. But I'm definitely not in one. If I had to fall outside of two, I'd be in view three. But I think we also then have to think about, okay, what are the principles that need to be conveyed? What are the principles that were asked in the submission that are causing confusion? And I think the staff has done a very good job in identifying that being the, you know, if there is at least one decision, relevant decision to be made about how and for what purpose, then you're in A, not B24A, not in B24B. I was just, and maybe I was too critical, but I was just saying, let's make that a little more blunt than it is. But you did answer that question. I think the issue that also now has been around the table is being raised is, do we need to answer the question about what makes a how and for what purpose decision, whether a decision becomes relevant? Is it a how and for what purpose? I didn't think that was a question in the submission, but if we do think, well, then I guess that we could build that in.
Okay, thanks. Young Sue?
All right. I just want to concur what Bob, Bonnie, Jack, and Carl. You know, I think the agenda decision should be more generic and more educative. Instead of giving the people a conclusion, I think the agenda decision must be able to give them some ideas about how to apply accounting standards. Giving a conclusion is very risky, I think. The conclusion can always be changed depending upon the facts and circumstances. Mm-hmm. So if anybody submits a little bit different facts and circumstances, then we have to give them a different answer, and we have to explain them why we are giving them a different answer. So I'm definitely against option one. Maybe I'm going to go for option three. That is my favorite, but description of the neutral fact pattern is too difficult and too judgmental than I can endure with option two. So not definitely option one.
Okay, thank you. Goran?
Yes. I would prefer approach three. And I think that the even upload delay is quite useful. I'm not prepared, but I think that the even upload delay, it clarified how that preparers exercise their judgment. And as I said, I'm not precluding or denying that the possibility that the staff presented, that if that this non-predetermined conditions have an impact, quite substantial impact on the economic benefits, then it should be, classified as lease, accounted as lease. But if it is not, I don't think that there is no difference between that. I want to be accounted this fact that as a service rather than lease. So that as a financial statement users, what I want to see is that the kind of economic substance is faithfully represented on the balance sheet. And I think that the approach three would give that kind of clue to the preparers.
Marie?
I think it's important to explain the path which is followed, which is that, okay, in that case, we're in B24A, because not all quite are predetermined, and after we go to B25, and we need to see the economic benefits. But I think it's also important to answer the question raised, because otherwise it can give something which will not give any favor, and people would maybe have more questions saying, okay, why can't we answer this question, and it's only sort of description of what I should do, and does it mean that there might be different answer to that question? So I think it's important to find the right balance. And to answer the question, I think it seems that we are done other agenda decision, which is to explain the path which is followed that people can apply in other circumstances, but with answering the question we have, because otherwise people say, why is it case you cannot answer? Is it because it's not clear, which I think basically people consider it's clear.
I think that this question gives an opportunity to give some more guidance around 16, and I've heard a lot of discussion about that. And there seems to be the difference between just restating what is in 16 versus trying to tease out some more things and put some emphasis on the principles. So if I was a user of the agenda decision from the committee, I'd want more than's in the standard. So I'd want the committee to help me by pointing to things that the committee thinks are important in this case relating to the facts. So I think it's difficult to stay right away from the facts. I think the facts have to be part of it. That's what I'm hearing from people's discussion.
Mary?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll let Michael in first. Sorry, I didn't see his card was up. Yeah. Michael?
So I completely agree with the staff analysis. I think maybe this is what Bob was saying. The one thing that I think is missing for me, if I look at the original question, I think the submitter concluded that all the relevant decisions were predetermined. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the, rather than just stating the facts that many but not all the decisions are predetermined, it is something explaining, because I think the difference with the staff analysis and what we're hearing around the table is that we've determined that all the relevant decisions haven't been predetermined. So it's that part, I think, that is missing that needs to come into it. But, so I think that's your view, Bob. Okay.
Mary?
I was going to say, listening to the discussion around the table, I think it's... If the submission had just come in that says, we're having a dispute between preparers, auditors, and regulators about whether this right, about the judgment we've made, is this right relevant or not, I think the committee would say, we can't weigh in on everybody's individual, do you agree with my judgment or not? Because that's a business that is not sustainable for this committee. I think the discussion that the committee has had has pointed out that it would be very helpful to give an analysis of, when you get into predetermined, it's not as soon as you have some predetermined or a number of predetermined decisions, but rather that you have to conclude that all relevant decisions are predetermined before you get into, what is it, B24B? before you get into that paragraph, and it's only then that you get into that. Therefore, the crux of this is assessing whether or not that is. Now, in terms of do you answer that specific question, I think you have to think really hard about whether it's critical to establishing consistent practice that you weigh in on that particular judgment. Otherwise, you do run the risk that people are saying, well, if you think that, you know, the judgment, you know, if you think that this judgment is that it's relevant, then what if we change the fact pattern? This, you know, if all you can't be here just to validate judgments, but there may be times when you think it's important to illustrate the judgment in order to give guidance. And I want to ask you to think about that and how much of what you're saying when you say you want more specificity is, I want it clearer about how you step through things. Versus, I want to opine on the judgment about whether or not this is relevant.
No, it's surely to illustrate the application of the standoff, for sure.
So listening to all of that, having complicated my own life with my alternatives. I think what we're trying to do is balance not sort of opining on too specific a fact pattern, because I'm not sure that's the most useful approach, but also I think we want to make sure that the message that came through in the staff analysis, which I think the majority of the committee members agreed with, which was even though on the face of it there's a lot that is predetermined, there are still relevant decisions that are left outstanding, and we would therefore conclude that box is ticked and this fact pattern is not lost. So if we put something out that's too generic, we might lose that message that came from that analysis, which I think was helpful and instructive. And like Guy, I think reflecting on sort of where the staff landed and the fact that they spent quite a lot of time thinking about it, that probably makes me think that perhaps you get to vote, of course, but just to give you my thoughts, the sort of approach to which is what's sort of like the agenda decision now, augmented with the two clarifications which Catherine had mentioned, which I can't remember now, but about the fact that you need to look first to see whether everything's predetermined or not, and to emphasise the fact that when you work out whether you've got relevant outstanding decisions and it's looking at the economic benefits, bringing those two points out more so there's more structure, but otherwise keeping it very close to what we have in the agenda decision to try and get the balance between being too specific to get our message across, maybe is the approach that in the first instance I'll ask the committee for a show of hands to see whether you could support going out for comment.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Okay, good. Thank you. All right, with that, we've end a break, I think. So let's break until 20 to 12.